It allows us to involve the public, increase the software quality. It allows us to reduce development costs. It allows us to increase the development cycles. And it allows us to collaborate with people that we probably wouldn't normally collaborate with in terms of developing software, which will then provide just an overall better code than we would normally get.
Yeah, one of the things the Office of Management and Budget has been saying is that agencies need to get control of big software development projects. Can open source help with that whole effort?
So actually, the promise of open source is that it will do that. It will provide numerous benefits. So this is something that's actually happening in industry already. And so what we're trying to do at NASA is just bring that method of software development into NASA projects. You have more eyes looking at the code at any given time, so you will be able to find bugs quicker. When it comes to upgrades of software, you're not essentially stuck into vendor lock-in where you have one proprietary piece of code and you're dependent on one organization or even one developer in some cases to update the code. So it allows NASA to benefit from a lot of people who are probably passionate about contributing to space exploration anyway, to be able to help build software that benefits our mission, that is better, it's faster development times, it's cheaper, and it has a number of promises like that.
And give us an example of the type of project or NASA program that this type of programming supports and can help.
Well, you know, one of our early success stories at NASA was the NASA Whirlwind Project. If you go to whirlwind.arc.nasa.gov, you can learn more about that. But it's essentially a 3D virtual globe. It's kind of like Google Earth, only it's more of a development platform and allows developers and scientists around the world to overlay NASA imagery, satellite imagery, aerial photography, topographic maps, and pretty much anything else that they would want to do on this platform. And so since it's developed in an open source way, we have a lot of people who are using it for different applications, which and sometimes we can't predict all the ways a piece of software will be used, and there might be a useful contribution from the development community that we can feed back into NASA and help improve our mission, maybe cut down on some software development we were going to have to do anyway.
The way you've described it, it seems like anybody would want to do it this way. Are there any reasons why maybe you would not want to use open source software?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So I look at open source software as one tool in a larger toolkit of doing business, of accomplishing your project. So it's definitely not going to be, you know, everything is open source. It's a way of developing software that makes sense in some situations. There are some situations where you may not want a large number of people looking at your code. For example, if you are positioning a satellite and you have to have it very specific and you don't want to share those coordinates with other people, you may develop a piece of code that you just do that internally. And you don't share that with the general public.
We're speaking with Nicholas Skitlin. He's director of NASA's Open Government Initiative. Now, you're having a summit or a meeting of open source people. Tell us what's going on there.
Yeah, so we're really excited about this open source summit that's happening at Ames Research Center today out in Silicon Valley. We've actually invited a number of just experts in open source speakers and just the general public, if they're interested, to participate in a discussion about building and leveraging open source at NASA. And the general idea here is that we want to be able to apply open source to NASA's toughest challenges, but we know that we don't have all the answers internally, so we've invited people to come together to start a discussion about this. We're going to look at the aggregate individual contributions from people at the summit over the next 2 days. We're going to give them a number of opportunities to talk with each other, to share their ideas, and then our goal is to take that wealth of knowledge that we're generating and update our internal policies, procedures, and processes to allow for open source development. Because right now, open source at NASA, not everybody has permission necessarily to do open source development. Our current policies can be interpreted to actually prohibit the development of open source, and we realize we need to update those and just get them in line with what's already going on in industry.
It sounds like you have established a good system for having communication with industry, even pre-solicitation, in a way that's ethical and you can learn what the best practices are.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, part of NASA's core mission is to engage the American public in the dissemination of information as well as the participation in our space program. And so, you know, at a very early stage, and we're still trying to figure this out, we realize that people have done this better. They know what they're doing, and they have a lot of knowledge to share with us. And so we're not necessarily even looking at, you know, vendors for specific software. We're just looking at the general philosophy of open source as applied to government. And what that means And so we have a lot of great speakers here as well. You know, we have Bob Suter from IBM. We have Mozilla Labs involved. We have Red Hat. We have a lot of people from NASA's projects. And those are just the 8 keynote speakers that you can watch actually online if you go to nasa.gov/open/source. But we also have a whole host of people participating. I believe we have about 750 people participating both online and in person. And that's, we really wanted to open it up for anyone to participate if they wanted to.
I think it's interesting what you said about sometimes an agency's policy might not always match that initiative or that philosophy of using open source and incorporating it into how you do business. So how do you overcome that? And isn't that an arduous, years-long process? Did you find a shortcut?
You know, that's actually my job at NASA, and it ultimately comes down to policy changes, technological adoption, and then the root of it all is a cultural change. And so, you know, a lot of people really embrace open source, but a lot of people, this is new to them. So this is a long process, and this is a start in that long process. And our goal is to bring all the stakeholders in the room and have a conversation about this so everybody's pretty much on the same page so that when we move forward, we have a lot of a wealth of knowledge to look back on and update our policies.
And among those participants, do you have program managers who actually have to deliver the mission and therefore you have an indirect interest in the whole software development process?
Yes. So we have obviously, you know, software developers, but we also have NASA scientists, NASA program managers, NASA engineers. We also have the folks that are involved in ITAR and IT security, as well as our legal office. And moving forward and updating policy within NASA and within government, for that matter, is it's a hand-in-hand project with a lot of different people, but in particular our Office of General Counsel. And so we're really excited that they support what we're doing and that they're involved in this discussion because they're pretty much critical to this. I would just like to really highlight one interesting thing that we're doing. You know, open government and NASA is an experiment, and we realize it's not a final product. It's a process that's ongoing. And one of the things we've really been experimenting with, and who knows if this is going to work, but I hope it does, is that we want people to participate remotely so that if they can't travel necessarily to Ames, they can actually participate online. And so this event is probably the biggest attempt we've ever had in remote participation. And I kind of liken it to the Super Bowl. You can buy the $10,000 Super Bowl ticket or however much it is. I've never been able to afford one. Or you can sit home on your couch with your friends watching a 55-inch LCD screen and eating popcorn, and it's almost better than actually being there. And so what we're really trying to do with this event is actually give that experience for the remote participants, let them feel that they're actually really part of the discussion, because they are part of the discussion. We actually have an entire team set up only to handle just the remote and virtual participation.